Now, what is important in trying to understand why Britain has become a much less democratic country over the last 23 years or so is the election of myself, Tony Blair, as the British Prime Minister. Because what that did was it set off something close to despotism, with myself, Tony Blair, as, if I do say so myself, a very successful despot. Because what we managed to do as New Labour, we were elected as New Labour and we governed as New Labour, was to bring about a situation where I, Tony Blair, managed to exploit the office of Prime Minister such that I was made the most money of any British Prime Minister ever from the office in British history. And I made this at the detriment of the people who I was supposed to lead, because not long after I left, of course, the economy completely collapsed and a lot of people lost their jobs and were in dire need. But I was extremely rich. The second thing I managed to do was I instituted laws in relation to certain issues that we're not allowed to talk about on here because of the lack of the very conditions of lack of democracy that I helped to bring in. I brought in laws against freedom of speech and freedom of expression with regard to certain important social topics, but these were asymmetrically enforced. So if you were on my side, if you were part of the group of people that I trusted, then you wouldn't find yourself prosecuted for saying these kinds of things. But if you weren't, if I saw you as a threat to my authority and to the authority of my government, then you would find yourself up in court for talking about these kinds of things. The third thing, this didn't actually happen in my case because of my very strong Catholic religious scruples, but I did, of course, have quite a lot of children, and so there's an association between my power and the ability of the way in which I have managed to pass on my genes, including having a child in office. It could be argued, in fact, that what is important is that we realise this, and we have a frank discussion about it, is that I was, in many ways, a kind of despot. And that is what I want to talk about today. Hello. I want to talk about the issue of despotism. And I want to talk about what despots are, where they come from, and why it is that we may be moving away from democracy towards despotism. Now, I'm inspired to do this by a very interesting book that was recommended by a follower of mine, an esquire, who some of you may be familiar with, called Despotism and Differential Reproduction by Laura Betzig. Now, what she basically argues is this. As societies become more hierarchical, they become more complex, or indeed, as they become more complex, they become more hierarchical. To the extent that people will exploit power to maximise fitness, then you get a situation that as societies become more complex and more hierarchical, you get more despotism. So you get more of a situation where people get into positions of power and then exploit that power for their own ends, in order to help out to enrich themselves, and in order to pass on their genes, to maximise their genetic fitness, to have the most children possible. And this was analysed in 24 societies, and there was a high correlation between the size of the group, the hierarchical complexity of the group, the asymmetry in the group, that is to say, that the unfairness of the group, the fact that if you were the king, then you could do what you liked, but if you were lower down the social hierarchy, you were you couldn't do what you liked. So the more unfairly and arbitrarily laws would be enforced for the benefit of those at the top. So the ultimate extreme example of this is that it's a criminal offence punishable by death to insult the head of state, but it's not a criminal offence punishable by death to insult anybody else. And finally, the higher was the level of polygamy. So the more complex and hierarchical the society was, the more the chief would enrich himself in terms of having the most women possible and controlling those women and thus maximising his genetic interests. So what was basically happening was that the more complex the society was, the more away from hunter-gathering towards farming or whatever, the more of a hierarchy developed, the more the person at the top of that hierarchy would take advantage of his power in order to enrich himself and in order to establish and keep his power and stop other people challenging him, and in order to have as many wives as possible and pass on his genes and thus be the ultimate alpha male animal. That was the essential finding. So, first of all, what's going on here? Well, what we're talking about is there are always going to be conflicts in terms of individual selection and in terms of what is called group selection. And this is something that Betzig notes. So individual selection is the basic thing that you act in your own interests, you pass on your own genes, and so on. Then you get kin selection, which is that you act in the interests of your kin, of your family. So there's a spinster auntie that invests in her nieces and nephews, even though she didn't have children. She's engaging in kin selection. Then you get group selection. Ethnic groups have been shown by research by Frank Salter to be extended genetic genotypes, and so consequently, you're indirectly passing on your genes at the group level by investing in the group and whatever. Now, what's been found under computer models is that groups that are highly group selected, i.e. have the optimum large number of people that act in the interests of the group rather than the interests of themselves. So groups that are high in positive ethnocentrism, that is internally cooperating with the group and doing things for the good of the group and cooperating and whatever and getting on, and negative ethnocentrism, that is hating members of the out-group and fighting members of the out-group, and being able to destroy and vanquish members of the out-group. So those two groups, high positive and negative ethnocentrism, they will tend to disproportionately pass on their genes, those kinds of groups, because those kinds of groups will win in the battle of group selection against other groups. So that's the group that dominates. But within that, there's going to be all kinds of variation. There's going to be all kinds of internal conflicts. And you're going to have all kinds of people that are conflicted between being individually selected, acting in their own individual interest, and acting in their own group interest. And often you will find the development of processes which persuade them to act in the group interest over the individual interest, such as certain kinds of religion which promote the importance of the group or whatever. But the point is that you will always get these positions of conflict, and you will get these conflicts between group impulses and individual impulses. And what you tend to find, according to Betzig, as the society becomes more hierarchical and more complex, is that people become, in some respects, more individualist, all else being the same. And those that reach the top will exploit the group for their own interests. Now, what she does is she compares 24 different kinds of societies. Some of them are from the New World, some of them from the Old World, ranging from hunter-gatherers to modern states. And what she finds is that, first of all, in the most simplistic form of society, that is to say, hunter-gatherers, you have no leadership at all. There is no clear leadership. It is not clear who is in charge. Somebody may take charge if there is some kind of crisis, but it is not clear what is the case. Then, as it gets a bit more complex, you get the headman, and so there is somebody who is recognised as being in charge. Then, as it gets more complex still, you get somebody who is regarded as having authority over the headman. So these are the three levels of complexity. That person is able to resolve disputes and whatever. That person is turned to resolve conflicts, and that means that person, and he can hand out punishments as well. So that person is the person who is in the position of power. The next thing that you then get is asymmetry. That is to say, a bias towards power. So symmetry would be, here's the law. The law is that if you insult someone, you must pay a fine or whatever. This is a punishment. And this is true for everybody. Now, what you find as the society becomes more hierarchical and more complex is asymmetry. That is to say that people that are low down the social hierarchy, that law will be enforced on them. But if they are higher up the social hierarchy and they have contacts and they have power and they have kinship networks and whatever, then the law will not be enforced on them, or it won't be enforced as severely. And with the person right at the top, the king, let's say, it won't be enforced at all. Or you might have a rule where it is literally a crime punishable by death to insult the king or anyone associated with the king, but that's not the case for anybody else. That's asymmetry. Or that adultery is fine, except with one of the hundreds of wives of the king. That would be an example of asymmetry. And then finally, you get the situation where, as the society becomes more complex, you get more in the way of polygamy. You get more and more and more wives up at the top of society held by the king, and fewer and less and less and less access, relatively speaking, to females at the bottom of society. So those are the basic things. And what was found in this study was that as the hierarchy gets more complex, people will indeed exploit their position of strength. They will make society increasingly despotic. They will increase their own power. They will increase the number of wives they have. They will prevent people from criticising them and whatever. And so you get asymmetries in the law. So basically, there will be this utter selfishness that will take hold of the society, in which the people at the top will exploit those at the bottom, i.e. you will get despotism. You will get control of lots of people by one individual or group of individuals who will take charge and exploit everybody else in order to maximise their genetic interests at the extent of everybody else. Now, she goes through a number of societies, and for the most simple is the Kung, that is to say, the hunter-gatherers of the Kalahari Desert. In these people, there are really no social differences. It is an extremely unstable ecology. It is an extremely easy ecology. everybody kind of has access to food, so there aren't really any substantial social differences at all. You can't really store food or anything, so the people can't store resources, and so there are no social differences. Now, you do get asymmetry there in terms of how many wives people have, and research into these people has found those that are considered at the top of the hierarchy, the sort of headman or occasional headman, will tend to have disproportionately large number of wives, and they get and offspring, and they achieve this by hunting and sort of showing off to the females. But there is not much in the way of exploitation, and also in these kinds of societies, if it's very difficult for fusion despotisms to develop, because if you fall out as any kind of conflict, then you get fission. People just split away into other societies. And it's easy to do so because you've got a vast amount of space because you're a hunter-gatherer. And there's so much space that there's no conflict for resources with other societies, really. You can just split away. You're not surrounded by possible hostile people. Now, as society gets more complex, as it starts to develop farming and herding and things like this, you get a society like the Tiv. Then things get a bit different. Once this happens, of course, then you can start. Some people will be better at farming than others, will be more successful. They can store resources. They can store resources, and this can give them power. And if they have power, then they can persuade other people to ally with them and give them a few crumbs from their table. They are better able to persuade females to want to have sex with them because females tend to sexually select for status, because if they sexually select for status, then their offspring and themselves are more likely to survive under evolutionary conditions. And so therefore they will pull in more wives than a similar hunter-gatherer in the Ai Kung could possibly do, because the differences in status are so small among the Ai Kung. It's more difficult for people to break away because you have there's a small amount of land possibly surrounded by other people who you are in conflict with, who are hostile to you, who will kill you. So it's more difficult to break away. If you're in an agricultural economy, you have invested more, you have more to lose because you have land or whatever that you have exploited and you have grown, and so it's more resources, so it's more difficult to break away, and so you can see, and so you end up with a kind of rank society as this develops, with inherited rank and with larger and larger social differences, with people who are differentially good at something like farming, which is more complex, requires and intelligence differences and whatever, and personality differences come into play, and so you end up with these social differences, and then these can become instantiated into ranks, and therefore you get despotism, where the person at the top will bring in unfair laws, where he will judge people according to how powerful they are, and therefore he will apply the laws unfairly, and where he will exploit his position of power to maximise his fertility by having as many wives as possible and controlling them as a form of a harem, which is itself is a kind of despotism. So that's the next stage. In the stage after that, you get the Zulus and people like this, where you get extreme, much more complex societies, much more complex agriculture and whatever, much larger polities, and where the person at the top has much more power and is much better able to exploit this power, where you really can't break away at all. And so therefore you end up with a despotism, and in which you have the Zulu king who has hundreds of wives, and if you have sex with one of those wives, then you can be killed or whatever. I accept you're less likely to be killed if you have more power yourself, and you have this totally unfair despotic society in which the big man is in charge, and he massively disproportionately passes on his genes, in which he enforces the laws arbitrarily for his own benefit, and there is total asymmetry and so on. And so that is the and those are the kind of societies that you get throughout the world. Throughout most of the world, these kinds of societies, these despotisms, where it is almost inevitable that people, once you get a complex society, then people will, and you will get a hierarchy, because you will get people who will be differentially good at doing a particular thing, in part of this complex society where there are different niches. You will get people that are able to exploit this better than others in order to get more resources. And once those people are able to get more resources, they will move to the top, and then they will act to keep those resources as their own, and to use those resources as a means of leveraging power over other people, over ensuring they have high access to desirable females, and keeping themselves in the position they want to be. And this will always inevitably happen. And so therefore, it is a route, the more complex and hierarchical society becomes, the more likely you are to get despotisms. Now, the interesting thing, of course, is that what this book looks at is still relatively primitive societies. It doesn't look at anything beyond the sort of medieval standard of societal development, or even less than that. It doesn't look at societies that are living in extremely harsh yet stable ecologies. And this becomes interesting in terms of understanding why it is that we break free from despotism. How do we end up with something that's not despotism? How do we end up with something that's a democracy? How do we end up with something that's relatively fair? What is it that causes this? Well, I would argue that the key factor is group selection, which we looked at a minute ago. So if the situation is particularly harsh and particularly stable, but particularly harsh, that's the point, then what you get selected towards is K strategy. And remember, we've looked at this before on this channel. There are two fundamental extremes of a spectrum of how you live your life. Fast life history strategy, that is, live fast, die young. The ecology is unstable but plentiful, but it's unstable. You can be wiped out at any moment. You invest all your resources in sex and in copulating with as many females as you possibly can. And that's the kind of thing that the king in one of these despotisms is doing. He's basically investing a lot of his resources in obtaining sex, basically, and doing all that he can to obtain sex and have lots and lots of children and investing relatively little in them. As a society becomes harsher and more stable, then this system won't work, because if they're not adapted to this, because then the carrying capacity for the species is reached, members of the species start to compete with each other for resources. And once they do that, once they're competing with each other, then they will be better able to compete with each other if they ensure that their children are adapted to the ecology. If they ensure their children are adapted to the ecology, that means they have to take energy away from investing in sex and energy towards investing in their offspring. And so they start to have fewer children, fewer wives, and invest more energy in their offspring. They're also under greater stress from the harsh nature of the ecology. Therefore, you get higher group selection. You are more able to survive in conditions of group selection if you are, remember, more internally cooperative and externally hostile. Internally cooperative will select in favour of high impulse control, high conscientiousness, high agreeableness, that's altruism and caring about the feelings of others, and also high intelligence, because this is associated with ability to invent brilliant weapons and also the ability simply to get on with people. Similarly, if you have to invest in nurture, you'll be better at nurturing if you're high in agreeableness and high in conscientiousness. And so the very nature of the personality changes, and people become more cooperative, more altruistic, more rule-following, more interested in fairness, more interested in everyone getting along. And so this idea that you will simply exploit people for your own ends, this kind of psychopathic tendency to exploit people and just use them and create this despotism, will be less able to happen. People will be more intelligent. People will be more able to see that if they act in a certain way or let certain things happen, then a despotism could be caused, and this could be a very bad thing for them. People will be less desirous to become despots, because overall people will be kinder and more cooperative and more rule-following and more pro-social. And so this high level of harsh group selection militates against the possibility of despotisms coming about. And also you can see how, and this is something that the author Betzig does actually look at, you can see how as the society is under greater levels of group selection, then the ability of the despot to maintain his position of power is what is fundamental to this, is that his group is able to survive. Obviously, if his group is destroyed, then he is destroyed, and he no longer has this huge access to women and the ability to pass on his genes. And so as group selection goes up, as there is this situation where there's this conflict between different groups, which is more likely to happen in a harsh ecology where there is more competition for resources, then of course the man can realise that a person that has less power can contribute to him maintaining his position by contributing to the good of the group, such as by fighting as a soldier or whatever, by acting in a group-selected way. And so if he does that, then he can negotiate a reward. He can negotiate something in return. And what he will negotiate, of course, is greater access to females, greater access to resources, a fairer system that is fairer on him. And so, therefore, group selection helps to bring about something closer to a society that is democratic, to a society that does not get dominated by one individual, by a society that perhaps is dominated by one individual, but is dominated by one individual to a much lesser extent, because he has to bargain with the people further down the hierarchy in order to get them to act in a group-selected way, in order to maintain his position. And he does this by opening up access to females, by making sure that laws are less asymmetrical and are more fair and reasonable, and by opening up general access to resources. And so, by, as it were, sharing the spoils of war and sharing the spoils of life, including females. And so, consequently, you get a movement when societies become even more complex than the kind of societies that are looked at by Betzig, i.e. societies that are under very harsh group selection and develop not just complex farming or whatever, but cities, and you get a movement towards democracy, you get a movement towards lower levels of polygamy, you get a movement towards lower asymmetries, you get a movement towards less despotism. And so this is seemingly what has happened in a lot of Western countries, and it's seemingly why you get the development of monogamy, you get the development of laws that are more fairly enforced, you get the development of these kinds of things that we associate with a functioning civilization. Now, what is the situation now? And this moves me back to Tony Blair, who I discussed earlier. What is the situation now? Well, we are under a situation, again, as we've discussed before on The Jolly Heretic, in which group selection has collapsed. Up until the Industrial Revolution, we were under harsh Darwinian conditions, in which child mortality rate was 50%, and in which we were under harsh levels of group selection, therefore, under which there was a limited amount of resources, which we were only just surviving, and in which groups, different European ethnic groups, for example, were battling it out for resources. This was the essence of group selection. We were under harsh group selection, and very harsh group selection, of course, selects for democracy. It selects against despotism. Because if you're under harsh group selection, then as the potential despot, you have to be prepared to bargain with other people lower down and open up resources and rights and women and whatever to them in order to maintain your position. Now, that is decreasingly the case, because we are no longer under this situation of harsh group selection. And so, consequently, what we would expect is for democracy to become increasingly debased, because there is no, once a person gets into a position of power, there is relatively little need for him to maintain democracy. He's not going to get much out of it. What does he get out of it, allowing democracy? He gets out of it the possibility he can be removed from power. He gets out of it the possibility that his resources can be less than they would be. Why would he want that? So you can see how the collapse of these Darwinian harsh selection conditions of group selection would militate against democracy being maintained. Similarly, as we have discussed, democracy is associated with a certain level of intelligence. Intelligence, of course, means that you is associated with trust, it's associated with social skills, it's associated with the ability to get on with people, and so on. But intelligence seems to be decreasing. We know this for genetic reasons. We know that the percentage of the Icelandic population that has genes that are associated with high intelligence has gone down over the last three generations. So we're becoming genetically less intelligent. This would militate against maintaining democracy. Also, the fact that trust is going down, which it is for various reasons, including genetic reasons and the intelligence decline, would militate against democracy being continued. Also, one of the issues that could be argued as to why democracy develops is because you have all of these people, as society becomes more complex, much more complex, you get more and more people filling lots of social niches in which they have very, very specific skills and can do very, very specific things which they have to be trained for a long time to do and which other people simply can't do them. And so in order to win in the battle of group selection, the despot has to draw upon these people that have these skills in order to build proper machines of warfare or important buildings or whatever. And so therefore he has to keep these people that have these important skills on side. And he can do this by having a society that is fairer, that is more reasonable, that is more democratic, where they have greater access to females and whatever. So that people have these skills. But again, it could be argued this is decreasingly the case, because any kind of skilled labour labour that would be involved in the production of food or whatever is exported abroad, and all we have now in Western societies is people in service industries. And there's a degree to which that's not particularly skilled. In a lot of these jobs, all it is just data input that eventually even robots could do, and so these people don't need to be negotiated with at all. And so what we would expect is that there would be a rise in despotism. What we would expect on this basis is that democracy, simply on these bases, there are other bases as well that would predict it, such as high levels of immigration. What does immigration do? Immigration means that, as Putnam has shown, it reduces trust in the society because the different ethnic groups don't trust each other because we're evolved to trust people who are genetically similar to ourselves. But also it reduces trust even within the ethnic group, because the people that are the dominant ethnic group perceive their own ethnic group as people who now might collaborate with the incomers against them. And so all of these things reduce trust, reduce, therefore, the ability to maintain democracy and elevate the possibility of despotism. And that is what we are, I think, beginning to see in Western countries. And I think that is certainly what we saw with someone like Tony Blair. We saw someone who, even if he wasn't a full-on despot, he had the capacity to become a despot, and he acted in a highly despotic way. Now, he didn't, of course, because of his strong Catholic scruples and whatever, he didn't take advantage of his situation nor father lots of children by lots of women, not we know of, although there were people in his government like John Prescott or whatever that had and David Blunkett and various others that had affairs, that used their position of power basically in order to gain differential access to females beyond the monogamy that would be Robin Cook. In fact, now I think about it, you know, an extraordinary number of them if you compare it to the Conservative government. Just of the new Labour government and just very senior members, Deputy Prime Minister, Foreign Secretary, Education Secretary, a very large number of them that had affairs. And so this could be argued to be moving in the direction of despotism because it's this exploitation of females that you do when you're in a position of power. So what we could be moving towards, we're moving back essentially, back towards despotism. And only we can do something to stop that from happening. Okay, well, I hope that's a bit of interest, and if it has, then please subscribe. Very important that you subscribe. Very important that you hit the red button, because this channel is being severely shadow banned. Very important that you donate to help support the channel, and there are ways to do so below, particularly sending offline super chats, which I'm a big fan of, but also there are other ways if you really want to be very, very kind. If you have any ideas, such as my esquire who had this idea, please do really get in touch and tell me these ideas, and you can commission videos for things you might wish to be done. And I will see you soon, and remember, what is important is that you subscribe, is that you click the red button, that you watch the videos, that you spread the word, that you subscribe on BitChute, and that you fight back against the destruction of civilization that is happening at the moment. And I will see you soon, and goodbye.